Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, August 29th. For what is supposed to be a dull summer week, there is no shortage of topics to talk about. Though for crying out loud, that's been the case the entire past year. Some of us would like to pause under a shade tree, sipping a cool lemonade or adult beverage of our choice, but no! President Barack Obama, for example, chose his vacation week to re-nominate Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. Mr. Bernanke's term expiring January 31st, but Obama, recognizing it'd be best to make a decision earlier than later, went with the bearded one, citing Bernanke's calm and wisdom. Well, Bernanke clearly blew it before everything began to unravel a year ago, but most would agree he's largely gotten it right since, at least thus far. And with unemployment high, capacity utilization historically low, and zero inflation, the Fed can keep interest rates near zero. The question of the day, however, is will this loose money policy eventually lead to new bubbles? The Fed is also now tasked with withdrawing all the excess credit before fanning inflation, while at the same time withdrawing too quickly can kill the recovery. So it won't be easy. But let's start with the economy and a potential recovery. This was a week like the prior one that had some legitimate good news, not just less bad. As the S&P Case-Shiller Index on Housing in 20 major metropolitan markets revealed that prices rose 1.4% in June over May, the second consecutive monthly gain for this barometer, with 18 of the 20 markets trending positive. And in a separate indicator, median prices in California rose in July over June by a range of generally between 3 and 6%. As longtime resident Ronald Reagan would have said, not bad, not bad at all. New home sales for July also soared 9.6% nationwide, far better than expected, and yet another sign of a bottom in this sector. And two readings on consumer confidence came in better than expected as well, though the markets misread one of them, frankly. Then you had solid news from both Dell and Intel late Thursday and early Friday, whereby Dell reported sales and profit for its recent quarter that beat estimates as PC and notebook sales came in better than expected, owing to a consumer that has a bit of a bounce in their step, or so it seems. Business spending, on the other hand, remains punk. Intel raised its revenue outlook for the current quarter on stronger-than-expected growth in its microprocessors. Another good sign. This is exactly the kind of news we've been looking for, but then you have the pessimist, like Mortimer Zuckerman, editor-in-chief, U.S. News and World Report. Quote, "The metrics show that all the drivers of the previous boom, consumers, housing, and easy credit, are in reverse gear and will stay that way as a drag on the growth of the economy even when it moves technically out of the recession. The most important signal of any recovery is an increase in employment. We are not likely to see that soon for a number of reasons. Before hiring new workers, companies will increase the hours of temporary workers and move workers they kept from part-time to full-time. Had employers not been forced to reduce the work week to slightly over 33 hours, we'd have another 3 million out of work now. Equally disturbing is that the number of people out of work 27 weeks or longer has reached a record 5 million, suggesting that job losses have been caused by structural changes in the economy that may be permanent." Mort Zuckerman continues, "We can't look to government to get us going again. The current budget deficit of about 13% of GDP substantially forecloses that option. So if we are to have a sustained recovery, it will have to come from the revival of private demand. But how and from where? Just consider what the average American is facing, a huge erosion of net worth via losses in financial equities and in housing wealth, the end of easy and cheap credit, a jobless recovery, and oil prices are rising. Households still have a lot of debt in relation to disposable income and a long way to go in deleveraging before they open up their wallets. The poor two-thirds of U.S. households are virtually broke. The wealthier ones are facing substantial tax hikes. Taken together, it's a lethal combination for consumer spending, and without any fundamental improvement in either income or wealth foreseeable in the household sector, consumer spending will stay weak. These are the reasons I think forecasters relying on an inventory-led bounce in growth may be whistling in the dark. If we have one, it will most likely stall. Zuckerman concludes, the government spokesmen are constantly indulging in happy, confidence-building public talk. While this is understandable, these statistics cited above reflect a need for caution on their part lest their credibility be undermined. Surely, they understand that this financial crisis is unprecedented and hence unpredictable. Therefore, we must be positioned to brace ourselves for the long haul. Last week, I told you the Obama administration was going to hike its long-term deficit forecast by $2 trillion, which it proceeded to do on Tuesday. Tax revenues are also estimated to be 17% lower in 2009 than 2008. An editorial from the Wall Street Journal. Earlier this year, when President Obama was selling his first budget blueprint, he promised 10 years of borrow-and-spend budgeting. Yesterday, reality struck. A burst of sustained economic growth, which we'd love to see, would substantially boost tax revenues and reduce future debt. But there's nothing in the Obama budget that nurtures or rewards growth or small business. Most of the major policy initiatives, such as the $1 trillion cap-and-trade energy tax, are a drag on growth. Mr. Obama wants to raise capital gains, dividend, and income tax rates, which will reduce risk-taking, innovation, and investment. The House health care bill would impose an 8% payroll tax on millions of small business owners, which will destroy jobs. The White House issued a statement yesterday that the president is very concerned about these out-year budgets, but apparently not so concerned as to stop pushing for a new $1 trillion health care entitlement that is conveniently not included in these latest budget forecasts. Obamanomics has turned into an unprecedented experiment in runaway government, with no plan to pay for it, save perhaps for a big future toll on the middle class such as a value-added tax. Separately, the Journal opined on the reappointment of Ben Bernanke. Quote, a striking fact of the last 2 years of financial trouble is how accountability has differed in the public and private spheres. On Wall Street and across the country, decades-old firms have failed. Fortunes have vanished, and some former captains of finance face jail or fines. In Washington, meanwhile, most regulators and members of Congress remain on the job, often with enhanced power. That's certainly true of the Fed and Mr. Bernanke, whom the president praised yesterday for bold action and outside-the-box thinking that has helped put the brakes on our economic freefall. In a speech last week to a gathering of central bankers at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, Mr. Bernanke offered his own crisis narrative that also cast the Fed as the hero. Wall Street seems pleased as well by the reappointment, as it once again makes money from the Fed's accommodative policy and near-zero interest rates. Stephen Roach, Chairman Morgan Stanley Asia, from a op-ed in the Financial Times. Quote, Barack Obama has rendered one of his most important post-crisis verdicts. Ben Bernanke will be nominated for a second term as chairman of the Federal Reserve. This is a very short-sighted decision. While America's head central banker deserves credit for being creative and courageous in orchestrating an unusually aggressive monetary easing program, it is important to remember that his pre-crisis actions played an equally critical role in setting the stage for the most wrenching recession since the 1930s. It is as if a doctor guilty of malpractice is being given credit for inventing a miracle cure. Maybe the patient needs a new doctor. Mr. Bernanke made three critical mistakes in his pre-Lehman incarnation. First and foremost, he was deeply wedded to the philosophical conviction that central banks should be agnostic when it comes to asset bubbles. On this count, he stood with his predecessor, serial bubble-blowing Alan Greenspan, who argued that monetary authorities are best positioned to clean up the mess after the bursting of asset bubbles rather than to preempt the damage. Second, Mr. Bernanke was the intellectual champion of the global savings glut defense that exonerated the U.S. from its bubble-prone tendencies and pinned the blame on surplus savers in Asia. While there's no denying the demand for dollar assets by foreign creditors, it is absurd to blame overseas lenders for reckless behavior by Americans that a U.S. central bank should have contained. Asia's surplus savers had nothing to do with America's irresponsible penchant for leveraging a housing bubble and using the proceeds to fund consumption. Third, Mr. Bernanke is cut from the same market libertarian cloth that got the Fed into this mess. Steeped in the Greenspan credo that markets know better than regulators, Mr. Bernanke was aligned with the prevailing Fed mindset that abrogated its regulatory authority in the era of excess, the derivatives explosion, extreme leverage of regulated and shadow banks, and the excesses of mortgage lending were all flagrant abuses that both Mr. Bernanke and Mr. Greenspan could have said no to. But they did not. As a result, a complex and unstable system veered dangerously out of control. Stephen Roach continues, ultimately, these decisions boil down to the person, in this case Mr. Bernanke, who's being charged with the awesome responsibility as America's chief economic policymaker. As a student of the Great Depression, he should have known better. Yes, he reacted strongly after the fact in taking actions to avoid the pitfalls highlighted by his own research. But he lacked the foresight and courage to resist the most reckless tendencies of the era of excess. The world needs central bankers who avoid problems, not those who specialize in post-crisis damage control. For that reason, he should not be reappointed. Let the debate begin. Taking a look around the world, China continues to dominate discussion as the Bank of China wants to ensure reasonable and ample liquidity, with Premier Wen Jiabao weighing in that the government will maintain its fiscal and monetary policies as the economy's recovery isn't stable. But then there were further statements that the central bank wants smaller financial institutions to cut back on lending due to overcapacity in some areas, such as in the steel industry. As Premier Wen put it, China needs to be cautious against being blindly optimistic, while in the case of the banks, being concerned with a ton of bad loans on their books. In Japan, exports rose 2.3% in July over June, a solid positive, while the jobless rate there hit a new high of 5.7%, and consumer prices fell 2.2% in July over a year ago, further evidence of deflation, though the energy components, when viewed versus a year ago, are too negative when measured with today's realities. In Europe, all manner of measures of both business and consumer confidence continue their uptrends, but Eurozone retail sales fell for a 15th consecutive month. Finally, as noted above, the news for the week was largely good, but we've come so far, so fast. Further strong gains require something even better. That said, while almost everyone is calling for a correction after a 50% run-up since the March 9 lows, stocks still managed to eke out further gains, with the Dow Jones crossing 9,600 before finishing the week at 95.44, up 0.4%. The S&P 500 added just 0.3%, while NASDAQ tacked on 0.4% and is now up 28.6% on the year. For my part, I really don't care how we get there, just as long as we do, as I haven't deviated one iota from my prediction for 2009 that the Dow and S&P finish up 20% and NASDAQ 30%. I am, however, still concerned about Iran and H1N1 as potential game changers, with September being a critical month for both. That's all for today. I'll be back with you next Saturday, September 5th. Have a great week.